Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining. My name is Dr. Vilma Vega, and I am one of the U.S. Regional Medical Directors for Vive Healthcare. And today we will be discussing building an optimized background regimen with fostemsavir in a clinic setting. This is what we will cover, including key factors to consider, optimizing outcomes for this population, as well as implications for choosing the best optimized background therapy, while also looking at parts of the BRIGHT study. Key factors that we consider when looking at that new next optimal regimen are really circled oftentimes in these patients around virologic failure. We have to consider the reasons why patients may fail. First of all, it's the patient themselves. What were the challenges to adherence? Were there other concerns, perhaps tolerability and adverse effects or comorbidities that may have prevented us from using certain antiretrovirals? Then there's the virus itself. It's evaluating what did the prior virologic failures look like, and then where is the patient at present time immunologically? And finally, the treatment itself. Was there suboptimal pharmacokinetic issues, potency? Perhaps in the past, were there low genetic barriers of resistance? And then, of course, drug-drug interactions and polypharmacy, remembering that our patients are aging with HIV, and therefore these concerns increase with time. When we think about our options, there are best approaches that we can follow. These are some of the factors, especially that I consider very often in my own clinic. You know, I look at the optimal regimen. Does it have efficacy with durability? Because both of those are important, because you want to choose a regimen that's going to be around there for as long as possible. And then viral suppression is key. This is while maintaining one or two fully active agents. We should optimize their CD4 count and their CD4-CD8 ratio to decrease morbidity and mortality while reducing the risk of persistent viremia so that we don't develop new resistant variants. We should limit risk of long-term comorbidities and mortality while limiting adverse side effects and toxicities. Well, I'll tell you, that is quite a mouthful and definitely requires quite a bit of thinking in this approach. With that said, should we respond to a problem after it arises? Sometimes we have to because we have no other choices and we may not have had the time to be proactive. But there are times when we can mitigate these problems before they arise and think about them earlier in time. And finally, it's the importance of choosing an optimal regimen, which requires an individualized approach. It is always important to look at each patient unique. Its uniqueness leads us to the understanding of why the patient is where they're at and how we can improve their future outcome, while also looking at this in a multidisciplinary approach. We have the DHHS guidelines to help us, but I want to point out to the two newest additions as of October of 2021, which are bolded in red. And that is that a new regimen can include two fully active antiretroviral drugs if at least one has a high barrier of resistance. And second of all, in patients that have multi-drug resistance with few treatment options, we need to consider antiretroviral drugs with novel mechanisms of action. For example, ibalizumab and fostemsavir. When we're looking at that new regimen, that optimal background therapy, what do we need to look at? First of all, are we going to achieve durable viral suppression? And how can we do that? Restoring and preserving immunologic function is important, preserving that CD4 count, reducing comorbidities and the risk of mortality, minimizing inflammation, and then finally, reduction in long-term healthcare costs. What are these attributes then? As we've already mentioned, it's the importance of that durable efficacy and that prevention of clinical progression, but it's more than that. It's the fact of taking the patient's needs into mind. We have to deal with favorable tolerability, both short and long-term safety issues. And then we can't allow a lot of our drugs to be able to exacerbate those current comorbidities. We have to be savvy about those drug-drug interactions. and avoid cross-resistance to existing antiretroviral classes and therefore considering novel mechanism of action antiretroviral drugs. And then finally, it's that simple administration and favorable timing with no food restrictions. We know how difficult that at times can be. So with that said, let's take a look at the drug that was approved as of July of 2020, which is Fostemsavir. And this was its phase 3 registrational trial, comprised of two cohorts. And both of these cohorts had actively failing regimens with viral loads of 400 or more. First, let's look at the randomized cohort, which had one or two antiretroviral classes remaining and had at least one or more fully active and available agents per class. They were randomized 3-1 to get blinded Fostemsavir and the failing regimen, or placebo plus the failing regimen. And between day 1 to day 8, the plan was to obtain that primary endpoint of the mean change in viral load. It did achieve a viral log suppression of 0.8 in the group of those that were on Fostemsavir versus 0.2 of those that were on placebo. Therefore, completing that primary endpoint and going on to then the open label Fostemsavir with the optimized background regimen that was decided upon by the primary investigator. In the non-randomized cohort, we had zero antiretroviral classes remaining and no remaining fully active and approved agents. Therefore, these patients were directly placed on open label Fostemsavir with the optimized background therapy. Since we are looking at creating those new regimens and the most optimized background therapy, let's look at what components were built into the BRIGHT study as far as the fact of that initial OBT. So here we see that in the randomized cohort, there were three antiretrovirals, which were most often used to construct this optimized background therapy. And that was dolutegravir, darunavir, and tenofovir. We have to remember that dolutegravir was mostly active in the majority of the patients that were in the randomized cohort. And this was probably because of the fact that it had just most recently been approved prior to the start of the BRIGHT study. When looking at the non-randomized cohort, we see that the majority of these patients had no fully active agents, except for the group that was on ibalizumab, because this was allowed to be on the investigational trial with ibalizumab while being on the BRIGHT trial, as these patients had no other options. So when looking at the impact of antiretroviral class and initial optimized background therapy in the BRIGHT study, I want to point out to the fact that the presence of an integrase inhibitor, and most specifically dolutegravir, in the initial optimized background therapy did have a positive impact on the virologic response for those in the randomized cohort. Also, when looking at this graph, looking at the fact of whether or not patients had 0, 1, or 2 fully active agents, and then comparing this to the proportion of patients that were undetectable, we see here that in blue, there were 0 active antiretroviral agents, red 1, and purple 2 fully active agents. With that said, in the randomized cohort, there was a 0 active antiretroviral agents because of the fact of protocol deviation and choices by the primary investigator. But the most important part that I want to point out is the fact that when there were 1 or 2 fully active and available agents in the randomized cohort, these patients did far better, and more proportion of these patients were undetectable by 96 weeks than those that were in the non-randomized cohort that had no options. The differences in the non-randomized cohort did happen because of the addition of ibalizumab use within this study. In summary, choosing the best regimen requires an individualized approach. We need to have time to figure out what is the next best regimen for those patients. And then, of course, we need to understand, we have to have knowledge about HIV resistance, and this has to be part of a multidisciplinary approach. We should also not forget that we have guidelines to help us. Optimizing therapy requires an assessment of all residual antiretroviral activity, because that will be important in constructing the best new regimen with long-term maximal virologic suppression. Remember, it's about also efficacy with durability. And considerations need to be given to antiretroviral options with new mechanisms of action. Finally, it's looking at ways of being able to decrease the risk for morbidity and mortality while decreasing the risk for ongoing HIV transmission. So considerations really need to be given to perhaps using this next best regimen or optimizing that therapy when we still have fully active antiretroviral options in place, instead of waiting to the point when patients have no options. In addition, we need to look at the reasons why patients fail to begin with. So thank you again for joining us today.